Mike Crane by my side. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Our single largest source of funding is listener support, and that means that in this season of giving, your gift is so valuable. Take a few minutes right now to support the programs you count on with your year-end gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, we came so close to our goal. Donors, we were looking for 10. That's probably close enough, but thank you to everyone who gave. The goal for this hour, 17 pledges by 8 o'clock. And we set up the goals so that we can keep on track and make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the programs you rely on.
Show your support during this year-end membership drive. And during our centennial year, by the way, you want to make the programs you enjoy and WPR possible today, tomorrow, and for the next 100 years. Let's meet this goal. It starts with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio has been around for a long time because we are committed to quality, and it's quality you recognize. And since listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget, that quality is possible thanks to you.
Your contribution makes this program possible and so many others as well. You're part of the quality you hear every day on WPR when you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Boy, the world just seems to get more complex all the time. We're
Indeed.
Following fascinating news. We have a great conversation coming up in just a minute. And, you know, you rely on WPR and the Ideas Network to turn complicated issues and the news of the day into understandable language and conversation, so you can figure out how it will affect you.
For you to get programs that are relevant to your life, we rely on your financial support. It truly is the single largest source of our funding. That's why we ask that if you've never given before, make your first ever contribution right now of, say, $10 a month or $120 during this year-end membership drive. That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's the season of giving. Do something extra when you give to WPR. Your donation always supports the programs you love. And right now, you can help those in need. Ask for one of the Food Bank thank you gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month. Your gift will provide meals to people facing hunger in your area. Do two good things with your gift to WPR right now when you choose one of the Food Bank gifts at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Here we are in the midst of a brief winter membership drive. Not even winter yet on the calendar, but it sure feels like it. It's our year-end membership drive. Mike Crane here with Kate Archer-Kent, inviting you to make a pledge of $10 or $20 a month or whatever amount you choose, because that's the right amount. And because the single largest source of our funding is listeners, your gift is really important for the Ideas Network right now.
Giving to WPR is quite easy. All we need is your name, your contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay.
And it'll take just a few minutes to make your gift to WPR. Your support right now really makes a difference. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here's our challenge this hour. We are looking for 17 pledges. 17 pledges, and this is the time to get chipping at that goal. Chip away at it. The year-end membership drive is the last pledge drive of our centennial year. Make your birthday gift today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It ensures a bright future for the programs you rely on.
During the last hour, we heard from Donna from Cumberland making a pledge. She said, "I'm giving because of the early morning program on Life is a Joke. I ordered the book immediately." She's a teacher in corrections, and she said she'll use the book to encourage her colleagues and hopefully drive home some thought-provoking ideas to her students. Thank you, Donna, for that pledge and for listening. We'd love to hear from everyone else who appreciates the Ideas Network at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR is listener supported. That means that your gift is powerful. It makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. President Trump announced from the White House yesterday that the U.S. will view Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. With that, he ordered the State Department to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. The controversial move threatens to unsettle the region's tense politics, as it is. Guy Ziv is an assistant professor in the School of International Service at American University. He's an expert in U.S. foreign policy toward the Middle East, U.S.-Israel relations, Arab-Israeli peacemaking, and Israeli politics. He's also the author of the book Why Hawks Become Doves, Shimon Peres and Foreign Policy Change in Israel. Guy, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Well, President Trump called the decision to acknowledge Jerusalem as Israel's capital a, quote, recognition of reality. In essence, he said it's where all the important Israeli government has been taking place for decades. So is this more of a formality or is this a really big deal?
Well, both. You know, as far as Israel is concerned, Jerusalem is its capital. It's always been its capital. And not surprisingly, President Trump's speech was generally received very warmly by Israelis, and particularly those more on the right of the political spectrum who are who really wanted him to do this for a long time and without further delay. The real question is, why now? The timing of this announcement is disconcerting to many observers of the Middle East, precisely because of all the warnings that President Trump received and chose to ignore from Arab leaders and Middle East experts and diplomats, including, by the way, former Israeli diplomats who expressed concerns about the timing of this sort of announcement.
Well, Jerusalem has long been a contested city. Does it appear here with this announcement that the U.S. has taken a side, has taken Israel's side loud and clear?
Well, the U.S. has always sided with Israel. The U.S. was never impartial, and I really know of no one who would make that claim that the U.S. has been impartial. But the U.S. has in the past been an honest broker. And as an honest broker, it has prodded the Israelis on numerous occasions and often gotten them to make concessions to their neighbors on a range of issues, primarily territorial issues. So this is somewhat of a break from the past because Jerusalem, as you know, is highly contested and it's a final status issue. And so traditionally, the policy of the United States and the policy of the rest of the world is to kind of leave the status of Jerusalem to the negotiations to determine, you know, who gets what. And it's widely understood that West Jerusalem would remain in Israel's hands and remain its capital in a future two-state solution, whereas East Jerusalem would be the capital of a future Palestinian state.
And President Trump made no mention of East Jerusalem in his speech yesterday, in his 12-minute speech. Is that significant?
I think it is. I mean, he did mention it, I think, or he didn't mention East Jerusalem, but he did mention that Jerusalem, you know, he's not precluding Jerusalem from being discussed, negotiated in the future peace negotiations. But it was kind of buried in his speech.
Nuance.
You know, he mentioned the two-state solution, for example, but it came across as a mere afterthought, and even then he qualified it by adding, if agreed to by both sides, quote-unquote, which is hardly a firm position or a priority. So my concern, and the concern of many, is that his speech, you know, undercuts his own stated desire to reach that deal.
We don't have a ton of time to go into the whole backdrop of how we got to this point, but can you explain why Jerusalem is such a hot-button issue between Israelis and Palestinians?
Well, what makes Jerusalem so especially difficult as a core issue in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to resolve is that it's, you know, not only a very political issue, but it's a very religious issue. We're talking about three major religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, that have roots in Jerusalem. As you know, it's the holiest site for the Jewish people, yet we also know that 37% of residents of Jerusalem are Arabs, and they do not regard Jerusalem as Jewish. And so resolving it requires a lot of sensitivity to these different religious and political aspirations. And you have a very dense area, and as I said, holy sites that make this really, really a difficult issue to resolve, which is why President Bill Clinton and his successors have kind of left Jerusalem to the final status negotiations, but also in the Clinton parameters, it's clear that the idea is for West Jerusalem to remain in Israel's hands and East Jerusalem to become part of a future Palestinian state.
It's been the U.S. position to keep its U.S. embassy, though, in Tel Aviv, which is a financial center. It's a technology hub, not really take a clear stance on Jerusalem. However, Trump noted previous administrations vowed to move the embassy to Jerusalem, but he, as he put it, none of them delivered. Why has this been such a thorny political issue for the U.S. as to where the U.S. embassy is located?
Well, you're exactly right. Numerous presidential candidates, Democrat and Republican, have during their campaigns talked about moving moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And once they got elected, they, you know, realized that it was such a sensitive issue that they were going to issue a presidential waiver, which the president can do every 6 months if he chooses not to go ahead with the with a congressional act of 95, which does call for a relocation of the embassy. With respect to President Trump, this is obviously a break in U.S. policy, and he has gotten quite a bit of pressure from you know, certain sectors of the population. First of all, he has a mega donor you might have heard about, Sheldon Adelson, who has, you know, put quite a bit of pressure on him to keep his pledge. And then there's the evangelical Christian community in this country, which is a very important part of Trump's base, who has urged him to do this as well. So there are definitely some domestic political forces that have had quite a bit of, you know, that put quite a bit of pressure on President Trump. And I also think that to some extent, Trump wanted to deliver his campaign pledge, because it was a pledge that he not only made during the campaign, but even after he got elected.
We've been hearing from the global community in the aftermath of this announcement, some analysts as well, world leaders criticizing this decision. What do we know about warning, of course, of inflaming tensions, inciting violence through the Muslim world? How do we know about what is the reaction so far as we've less than 24 hours from the when this announcement was made?
So predictably, the Arab leaders issued strong condemnation, and as have non-Arab Muslim leaders. We also know that Palestinian groups have called for what they call several days of rage. You know, schools are closed, and many stores have, you know, decided to shut down for business over the next few days. So there are going to be some demonstrations. They've already begun these demonstrations. And the danger is that these protests can really spiral out of control fairly easily and kind of take a life of its own. And so nobody really knows where this can all lead, and that's what makes it so dangerous.
Could this lead to another intifada, another uprising?
It is possible. It is possible. But that would be, nobody can predict that. And there have been many predictions of new intifadas in the past that haven't quite borne out. We don't know. We don't know whether this is going to spiral out of control or perhaps die down in a few days. And the administration, the Trump administration, clearly has concluded that it's probably going to die down in a few days. And once it does, they can resume their negotiations. They're kind of behind the scenes shuttling back and forth between Israel and Arab capitals to negotiate that deal.
The government of Israel considers Jerusalem its capital, and most Jewish American organizations have long argued that the U.S. should follow suit. That move happened yesterday when President Trump announced that the U.S. will view Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. We're examining the repercussions with Guy Ziv. He is an assistant professor in the School of International Service at American University and an expert in U.S. foreign policy toward the Middle East and U.S.-Israel relations. Your questions welcome. 800-642-1234. Do you support or oppose the president's decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital? Is the move a formality, or do you think it will undermine the possibility of peace in the region? 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return in a moment. Learning about the repercussions as President Trump announced his decision yesterday to formally recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. With that, he announced plans to eventually relocate the U.S. embassy to the Holy City from Tel Aviv. We're gaining insights on that decision. But first, we'll get up to speed on our year-end pledge drive that is in full swing. And I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and here with me is Mike Crane. This year-end membership drive is the last drive of our centennial year. Your gift today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 ensures a bright future for the programs you rely on.
We've made a little bit of progress toward our goal for this hour. 15 more pledges in the next 34 minutes. We'd love to have your help. Make your gift to support the programs that you rely on every day here on the Ideas Network with a pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Show your support during this year-end membership drive. And during our centennial year, you want to make the programs you enjoy on WPR possible today, tomorrow, and for the next 100 years. So let's meet this goal. It starts with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, on this particular show and all day long on the Ideas Network, you hear multiple sides of an issue so that you can make up your own mind. Together, listeners and the hosts and our guests on the radio, we put together the conversation that helps us to keep up with the issues of the day. Sometimes we have lots of fun as well. And always we're following our curiosity and we learn.
We do learn. There's really nothing else like this on the radio. It is truly something special. Your support, it is vital for what makes it possible. The single biggest piece of our funding is listener support. So make your pledge during this year-end membership drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support the programs you count on.
During this holiday season, you can give something extra when you support WPR. Your donation, obviously, it makes the programs possible. And you can ask for one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month.
These thank you gifts provide meals to those facing hunger in your area through regional food banks in your area. Do two good things with your gift to WPR at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This year is our centennial. It's a special time that comes around, well, once in 100 years. We asked a few people, what are things you don't do very often?
I do not go on vacation very often.
I don't ride my bike enough.
I will do anything to avoid ironing.
Floss my teeth.
Like other rare things, a centennial is a special occasion. So celebrate with us right now by making a year-end gift. Consider giving $100. Thank you, and happy centennial.
Well, we had a really nice note coming in from Jim and Suzanne from Baraboo, speaking of length of time, not quite 100 years, but they've been listening for 50 years, starting their day with WPR, and they enjoy listening to news they can trust. Thank you so much, Jim and Suzanne. We'd love to hear from you, too, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Mike Crane here with Kate Archer-Kent.
Good morning. We're raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio all programs you enjoy on the air. So maybe giving a dollar a day is the right amount for you. When you think about it, a dollar a day is a great value. It's less than a cup of coffee or a soda or a day of cell phone service for that matter.
And a dollar a day comes out to $30 to $31 a month, and you can set that up as a monthly transfer from your bank account or charge your credit card as a sustainer. Make your pledge now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking for 15 more pledges in the next 32 minutes? We can do that. 15 more pledges. 2017 is marking 100 years of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're so proud of that. And your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 gives us a strong start to not only 2018, but for the next 100 years.
You know, we know that our listeners get it. And so here's a great comment from Max from Eau Claire. Heartfelt appreciation for the humane, diverse, respectful, and deeply engaged conversation that WPR promotes.
Excellent. Again, your support, very vital. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks. Looking at the news out of the White House yesterday as President Trump delivered a short speech announcing his decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. We're getting a read on what this news means with Guy Ziv. He is an assistant professor in the School of International Service at American University. He's an expert on U.S. foreign policy, author of Why Hawks Become Doves, Shimon Peres and Foreign Policy Change in Israel. Your questions welcome, 800-642-1234. Guy, when I read the name of your book there, I wonder what would have Shimon Peres thought about this moment? What would he say? This is, you know, the former president of Israel, the former prime minister, and the one who signed the Israel-Jordan peace treaty, Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Well, that's a good question, and I actually thought of the same thing as I've been watching this unfold. And, you know, I think Peres was a very strategic thinker and was a man of action. But there was typically a good kind of calculated reason for taking the risks that he took and making the decisions that he made over the course of his 70-year career. And what is puzzling about this particular announcement, as I mentioned, was the timing. And we know that both Secretary of State Tillerson and Secretary of State Mattis, both of them reportedly opposed President Trump's decision because of the strategic implications, or I should say the security implications. It's a very difficult decision to justify on national security grounds. And so I think Peres would have urged caution, and at this point, he would probably be calling for calm.
Let's go to John, who joins us from Brown Deer. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Good morning. I would just like to comment that the how much more destabilization or how much more unstable will the president's decision make the Middle East? That region has been unstable in an armed conflict for at least the past 50 years. And will this destabilize the region any more so than President Bush's invasion of Iraq in 2003?
Guy, go ahead.
Well, I certainly hope the answer is no, but of course, nobody knows for sure. It definitely was not a helpful move in that respect. Stability in the region has long been a U.S. objective in the Middle East, and this decision is probably not going to strengthen that stability, at least not in the short term. But we don't know how these demonstrations that we're seeing in the West Bank, in the Gaza Strip, we don't know whether or not they're going to spiral out of control. We don't know how long they're going to last and whether or not they're going to lead to widespread violence. It's a little bit too early to tell.
Well, John, thank you so much for calling in. Let's now go to Justin, who joins us from Waupun. Hi, Justin.
Hi. I understand that in many years past, Jerusalem was a melting pot where the Jews and Palestinians lived pretty much together and peacefully. Is that true?
To some extent, there's always been, I would say, an element of tension. And don't forget that between 1948 and 1967, Jerusalem was in Jordanian hands. And so the Israelis didn't have access to East Jerusalem. They didn't even have access to the Western Wall, which is their holiest site. If you're talking about the, pre-state Israel or even post 67 in the immediate aftermath, then by and large you are right. There hasn't been this kind of tension that we've seen in recent years, Jerusalem is just, you feel the tension in the air when you're there, and compare it, for example, to Tel Aviv, which is where many Israelis live along the coastline. You really sense that Jerusalem is just kind of ready for any kind of violent outburst at any moment. And so that's why you have to navigate this sort of thing very, very carefully.
And the holy sites are all in the middle of this tension. What about the holy sites that are in the crosshairs here?
I'm a little bit less concerned about that just because the Israeli security forces, the police and the rest of the security community was well aware of the possible repercussions of President Trump's speech. So I think they've got them covered. And I know that the U.S. State Department has issued warnings to its own citizens and to its personnel to kind of avoid some of these areas and take extra caution. So I'm a little less concerned about the actual holy sites and more concerned about what this means for regional stability, as the previous caller had asked about, and the idea of reviving, I should say, the peace process.
Well, let's talk a little bit about a two-state solution. You were quoted before the speech in a press release from American University saying Jerusalem is Israel's capital, whether Trump announces so or not. What Israel and Palestinians need from POTUS isn't a provocative statement, but rather a declared commitment to a two-state solution. Is that what we have going on here?
Well, President Trump hasn't quite stated what his end goal is, other than just the very vague notion of a deal. And I think that it is important for Palestinians who are living in despair and for both Israelis and Palestinians who have lost hope to outline his vision. What is the ultimate goal here? What can both Israelis and Palestinians hope to see? And I think it's very important that President Trump do so. Now, there were some rumors over the weekend that he was going to announce his plan on Monday, and then the White House clarified that there was not going to be any sort of announcement, and that the plan, to the extent the administration has one, will be revealed probably sometime in March. And I hope that that's not going to be too late.
Vice President Mike Pence is scheduled to visit Israel in about a week and a half. He'll address the Knesset. Pence said in an interview with the Christian Broadcasting Network that he'll be delivering the strong message that America stands with Israel. It's part of a wider trip that will also take him to the Palestinian Authority in Egypt. Pence also said he'll reaffirm America's commitment to peace in the region. What are you going to be watching for during the vice president's trip?
Well, we know he's going to be received warmly by Prime Minister Netanyahu, and members of his government, and by the Knesset as a whole. The real question is, how is he going to be received by members of the Palestinian Authority? Are they even going to receive him? Because there are calls to part with any sort of relationship, or at least formal relations, with the United States. Threats that various Palestinian leaders have made to cut off all ties with the United States. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but again, much of that pressure from the Palestinian street might require the president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, to kind of pull back. So I'll be watching to see, whether or not the Palestinian leaders are going to meet with Pence, And B, what is Pence's message? Again, this would be a good opportunity for this administration to outline its goal and to do so in a very public way, not just, you know, privately, but publicly. And so far, they haven't done so.
The Times of Israel is live blogging events as they unfold following President Trump's decision yesterday to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Palestinians across the West Bank and Jerusalem are participating in protest rallies. Protesters are carrying Palestinian flags and chanting anti-Trump slogans. We've seen reports this morning from the West Bank where protesters burned American flags and pictures of President Trump. Guy Ziv is an assistant professor in the School of International Service at American University. He stays with us. He's an expert in U.S. foreign policy toward the Middle East. What are your questions about this decision? You can join in at 800-642-1234. And we'll return to the discussion in just a moment. First, it's time to check in on our year-end membership drive. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Mike Crane. We're raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio, all the programs you enjoy, on the air. And whether your pledge is $10 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we truly count on your gift.
We'd love to hear from you right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You know, Kate, listening to this conversation this morning, I was thinking about how not only do we have informed and engaging guests, but we have informed and thoughtful and curious callers who really help to move the conversation along, and that's really wonderful. You know, our guests love to be on the Ideas Network, and a good reason for that, beyond the talented hosts, of course, is the wonderful listeners who participate. We're so glad to have you here, and we know you value the conversation you hear on this show.
Now take a few minutes to make this hour many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 12 more pledges in the next 20 minutes. That pledge drive is a great time to support the station you love.
And by the way, thank you if you've already given, and if you haven't, help pay for the programs you enjoy by making your contribution right this very minute at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving to WPR and the Ideas Network is really easy. It just takes a few minutes to make your contribution, and you'll get so much back. Consider a 9XM leadership gift of $100 a month or $1,200 a year or more.
That comes out to about $4 a day, and it makes the talk, the news, the music, the entertainment that you count on from WPR possible. Your 9XM leadership gift makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible today and for future generations. So give as generously as you can at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You have a lot of bills in your monthly budget that are out of your control.
We've seen a recent increase in our childcare costs as my daughter is currently going to a preschool.
Yes, my newspaper subscription just went up.
If you've looked at my electric bill lately, it has gone up substantially.
Unlike the other things you pay for, you're always in control of your sustaining membership. During this pledge drive, we ask our sustainers to consider an increase to your monthly gift. How about $5 a month? It'll go a long way to pay for the WPR programs you rely on day in and day out. Thank you for your ongoing support.
It's a great suggestion. Like Chris says, how about $5 a month to pledge your support to WPR at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Mike Crane here with Kate Archer-Kent. Listener support is the single biggest source of funding for WPR programs. That's why your support during this year-end membership drive is so important. So consider $5 or $10 or $15 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
This year-end membership drive is a great time to make your last gift of the year to WPR. It takes just a few minutes of your time at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And when you give, you'll have that great feeling of supporting the station you've enjoyed all year long and that you're looking forward to in 2018.
Another pledge came in, so now we're looking for 11 more pledges by the end of this hour. The year-end membership drive is the last pledge drive of our centennial year. How about celebrating 100 years of public broadcasting in Wisconsin with a pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In this pledge drive, you can do two good things at once. You can choose one of the food bank gifts. When you give $10 or $20 a month, you'll be providing meals to those in need in your area. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you've been making annual gifts for a while. That's terrific. Well, now is a great time to become a sustaining member, which is arranging monthly donations from your bank account or credit card. Easy to get started at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you so much for your support. The walls of the old city were illuminated with the American and Israeli flags on Wednesday as President Trump made good on his campaign pledge to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. We're examining the ripple effect and taking your questions with Guy Ziv, who stays with us. He's an assistant professor in the School of International Service at American University, an expert in U.S. foreign policy toward the Middle East, U.S.-Israel relations, and Arab-Israeli peacemaking. Join in the conversation. 800-642-1234. Dan in Franksville has been waiting. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Howdy. Yeah, I think the plan ought to work out all right over there with recognizing that a city is the capital. I mean, they've taken over about 50%, at least 50% of that territory has been stolen already. The plan worked good over here in this country. I think that's the blueprint they're using is the stealing of all the land of the natives over here. And then the best thing is when they act out, when they act violent, you make sure there's a lot of cameras on them to show that they're savages.
Well, let's get a guy to respond on, you know, how much land has been taken and by whom.
So I have a slightly different take on this. In 1967, the Israelis fought a war with the Egyptians, the Jordanians, and the Syrians. And won the war after 6 days, it's called the Six-Day War, and therefore took over the territories that they were able to capture. And so that the Gaza Strip had been part of Egypt, or occupied by Egypt, you can say, and Jordan had Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, and the West Bank, and of course we know that the Golan Heights was Syrian territory, and so Israel took over these territories, and the Palestinians, of course, were the inhabitants, but there was never a Palestinian state prior to the Six-Day War, prior to the 1967 war, and so all of these years. The Israelis had been occupying these territories. The initial idea, by the way, was to use those territories as bargaining chips with its neighbors, because Israel had sought a peace, and the Arab states had kind of a 3-no policy that they came up with in the Khartoum summit shortly after the 1967 war: no peace, no recognition, no negotiation with Israel. Now, that, of course, has changed over time, and now we're seeing a dramatic change, in fact, in the Middle East on that front, where Arab countries, Saudi Arabia, and others have been making overtures to Israel, in part because of the mutual threat of Iran and trying to counterbalance Iranian influence in the region. And as you may know, Israel does already have peace treaties with a couple of the Arab states, Egypt and Jordan. And the question is how to resolve the most intractable issue in the Arab-Israeli conflict, which is the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and that's what we're talking about here. And this latest move by President Trump may be a setback in that direction.
Well, Ross on Facebook wonders, why do we have to split up Jerusalem between Palestine and Israel? Why don't they make Jerusalem plus, say, 5 kilometers, its own country or its own state, and it governs itself?
Well, there have been all sorts of creative formulas over the years that have been proposed and suggested by various parties, the Americans and the Israelis and Palestinians themselves. I think that the Israelis do not want to separate Jerusalem from the rest of the country. And so I think that you're not going to see Israelis budge on Jerusalem remaining its capital. But we're also seeing Palestinians who probably are not going to budge on East Jerusalem being their capital. And so the general consensus, to the extent that there is a consensus among the negotiators, the Middle East negotiators, is that the city will serve as the capital of both states, assuming, again, that there is going to be a two-state solution.
Let's go to Syed, who joins us from Hartford. Hi, Syed.
Hello, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
Just a quick question about, do you see a role the Saudis may have played in this decision? The Saudis have been warming up to Israel in the recent years, or last year, I should say. There was a recent turmoil within the Saudi government following a trip by Jared Kushner, and a regional resignation from Saudi Arabia. He goes back, he resigned, then goes back to Lebanon, rescinds the resignation on the condition that there's no, that Lebanon becomes an isolationist, and there's that sort of leash, putting a leash on Hezbollah.
Guy, is there any role of the Saudi government and in this decision?
Yes, and this, in fact, can be a key or a very helpful tool that President Trump can actually utilize, should he choose to do so, to try to secure the deal that that he's been talking about. So Mohammed bin Salman is the Saudi crown prince. He is young, 32. He apparently has a very good relationship with Trump's senior advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and wants to shake things up. And so we have been seeing quite a few interesting activities in Saudi Arabia and in the region that has directly involved MBS, Mohammed bin Salman. And he can be a moderating influence here. The fact that he is warming up to Israel, the fact that he has so much influence, the Saudi Arabia has so much influence in the region, can be a very positive way to get the entire Arab world on board with a future Israeli-Palestinian deal. It's what they call the outside-in approach, the regional approach, as opposed to the more traditional inside-out approach, where you begin with the Palestinians and then other Arab states follow.
Syed, thank you so much for calling in. Taking a look here, Guy, at actually moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv, a senior administration official said it could take 3 or 4 years to fully move the embassy to Jerusalem. A Trump aide reportedly called that a conservative estimate. What's all that is involved with that it would take that long?
Yes. Yeah, so one footnote to this entire discussion about Trump's speech is that the embassy will not actually move to Jerusalem until during Trump's first term in office, assuming he'll even get a chance for a second term. So in all likelihood, it's going to be the next president who's going to oversee a new embassy in Jerusalem. It entails a logistical nightmare. We're talking about finding real estate, which is very difficult to do in Jerusalem. We're talking about making sure that it's the right location, that it has the security requirements that a U.S. embassy in Jerusalem would need to have. And so there are just so many logistical questions that need to be answered before they can even break ground over there. And so this will be something that will take place perhaps in 3, 4, 5 years from now, possibly even later, And in the interim, the president will be issuing that waiver every 6 months, that congressional waiver.
So, Guy, when we look back at the history books sometime down the road, is this decision by President Trump yesterday going to prove to be a major turning point in what happens in the Middle East, or don't you think so, or is it too hard to say?
It's too hard to say at this point. As I said, most experts and world leaders and diplomats warned President Trump not to make the speech that he made yesterday. But now that he did, I think that it's going to be very important for him to work overtime to reassure the Arab world, but in particular the Palestinians, that he is committed to establishing a Palestinian state. And that perhaps even go further and mention East Jerusalem as the possible capital or as the capital of their future state. They have to be given hope for a better future because right now, clearly, there is no hope. They are living in despair, and they need a diplomatic horizon. And I think that that's where the administration can come in and provide that for them.
Well, Guy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Guy Ziv is an assistant professor in the School of International Service at American University. His expertise is in U.S. foreign policy toward the Middle East and Arab-Israeli peacemaking. He's author of Why Hawks Become Doves, Shimon Peres, and Foreign Policy Change in Israel. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Nyasia Ellison. We had technical direction from executive producer Michelle Johnson. And now let's check in on the year-end membership drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent with my colleague here, Mike Crane, and this is your chance to support the programs that you count on every day here on the Ideas Network, programs that keep you in touch, informed, enlightened, interested, programs that make you think. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important as we end this year and look forward to 2018.
You know, one of the most important things to say, Mom teaches this to us, is to say thank you. And I'll urge you to make your pledge right now to say thank you for another really interesting hour of conversation. It's what you expect, but saying thank you would be terrific. And it's easy to do that by making a membership pledge for the conversations that you enjoy on this show.
Now take a few minutes to make the hour possible and so many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 8 more pledges before the end of this hour. Your gift right now is so important to keep us on track and to support the programs you rely on every day.
And thank you so much if you've already given. And if you haven't, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So you're thinking, I'm going to make that pledge. That's terrific. Now that you've made that decision, I just want to make a suggestion. How about becoming a sustainer? That's a monthly amount to be charged to your bank account or your credit card, and then you just set it up to be ongoing.
A sustaining gift is a powerful way of donating because it provides reliable funding for WPR throughout the year. It splits your gift into affordable installments that actually have a really big lasting impact. Choose an amount, say $10 or $20 a month, and become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've probably all had this happen. We spend money on something and then hardly ever use it.
I would say closets and closets full of clothes that I never wore.
I bought a pair of backcountry skis a few years ago that I have never used.
I bought an extremely cheap violin case that was so cheap that I threw it away within 10 minutes of opening it.
Unlike some investments, your donation to Wisconsin Public Radio is a good one. One you'll get value from every day. Make your gift to support the programs you count on right now. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your contribution during our brief year-end membership drive. Mike Crane here with Kate Archer-Kent, and we're suggesting amounts $10, $20 a month, $50 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount for you, and that's what counts. And because of the single largest source of funding being listeners, your gift is really important for the WPR programs you enjoy.
Joanna from Madison says, WPR is essential in my day-to-day routine. I don't know what I would do without the unbiased news and engaging stories I hear every day. Joanna, thank you so much. Join her and so many others at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks.